Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Real Talks. I'm your host, David Steele. I hope everybody had a fantastic and fabulous weekend. I hope they did a lot of fun stuff, and we're back at it. It's another week. We got a lot of stuff to get to. And as, of course, as everybody knows, there was a little movie that came out this last weekend, just a small one, really kicked off the blockbuster season. We'll get to that in a couple minutes. But before that, we have something that actually debuted last night. I actually watched it. I just happened going through YouTube and found it, and it dropped. And so that is the brand new trailer for Oppenheimer. Oppenheimer, this is a movie. Anybody who's not familiar with it, it is directed by one Christopher Nolan. That's the same one that did Memento, Inception, The Dark Knight, Dunkirk. So this actually, so I saw this on the IMAX screen when I went to go see Guardians. And by the way, guys, if you want to go check out my Guardians 3 spoiler cast, I will put it right up there in the top corner over there, and you guys can go check that out. And yeah, so I saw that and it was on the IMAX screen, and my goodness, does this look good. He's back. That's all I got to say is he's back. This is not only a stacked cast, as I've been telling you guys about for a long time. This story looks compelling, and I can't wait for this. And I think this is going to be Christopher Nolan as Christopher Nolan at his best. I think this is going to be one of his best when it's all said and done for him. So anybody who's not familiar with this story, it is a story about the gentleman who developed the nuclear bomb for America. And so, you know, it is one of those stories that it's not a sexy story, for lack of a better word. Probably not the right phrase to use. It is not a mainstream story. It is a story that is underappreciated because it kind of ended World War II for all intents and purposes. His name, obviously, was J. Robert Oppenheimer and how he developed it. As I said, this cast is stacked. And I can't wait for this. So this is coming out July 19th, the same day as Barbie. So it's going to be interesting to see the optics on that. But anyways, brand new trailer that just dropped. It looks, as I said, it looks fabulous. And I think that, so this is the story that came from THR about this. Oppenheimer new 3-minute trailer reveals scope of Christopher Nolan's nuke epic. A new trailer for Christopher Nolan's Oppenheimer reveals more story details and characters from the biographical chronicle of the story about the first atomic bomb. The trailer, which was first showed at CinemaCon and then revealed in theaters before Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, as I was saying, okay, I saw it in IMAX, so it looks stunning. Show scientist J. Robert Oppenheimer, played by Cillian Murphy, is pictured there, teaming with General Leslie Groves, Matt Damon, to assemble a team of scientists during World War II as they tried to beat the Nazis in harnessing the destructive power of nuclear energy. "You're the man who gave them the power to destroy themselves," Oppenheimer is obviously warned, and the world is not prepared. The World War II set biopic follows Oppenheimer, known as the father of the atomic bomb, during a moment in history when he knew that testing the atomic bomb might ignite the atmosphere and destroy the world, but hit the button anyways. In learning about the story, I wanted to be there in that room with them, see what it must have been like, Nolan said at Comic-Con. I wanted to take the audience there. To do so, I've assembled the most incredible cast and finest technicians. The film also stars Emily Blunt as biologist and botanist. Kathy Kitty Oppenheimer plays his wife. Florence Pugh, psychiatrist, Gene Chaco, Benny Safdie, theoretical physicist Edward Teller, Michael Angelin, Robert Serber, and Josh Hartnett makes an appearance as nuclear scientist Ernest Lawrence. The film also stars in roles not described Raleigh Malek, Kenneth Branagh, Dane DeHaan, Dylan Arnold, David Crumsman. You might remember him from a little show I love. It was called Numbers. I loved that back in the 90s. Alden Actionwright, and Matthew Modine. The Universal film was written and directed by Nolan in its first release since the 2020 Tenet, which, you know, that everybody had their opinions about. It's based on the book American Prometheus, The Triumph and Tragedy of J. Robert Oppenheimer by Cal Bird and the late Martin J. Sherwin. The film was shot in a combination of IMAX 65mm and 65mm large format film photography. Oppenheimer releases June 21st. Okay, this looks out of sight. I cannot wait for this movie. It's not the effects, it's the story. This is a story-driven story. This is another biopic about a man that really changed the world. You know, Matt Damon, you know, he was just an heir no more than a few months ago. Knocked it out of the park. I hope something really good happens with that. And by the way, guys, if you haven't seen the Air spoiler cast, and I'll leave that up there in the corner there as well for you guys, go check Air, that spoiler cast out. And better yet, go watch the film if you haven't, because it's awesome. So Matt Damon's on a roll right now, and we have a stacked cast. I can't wait for this. And I think Christopher Nolan's back. Now, getting back to Tenet, you know, there were some problems with it because of audio issues, because of a lot of things. But you also have to give it a little bit of leeway because it was released during the pandemic. So all of that being said, I think that, you know, it's one of those things where everybody gets a pass, right? So this is not really, Tenet was like the first misstep, if you will, of Nolan's career. Everything else he's done for the most part, okay? Whether it was Inception, whether it was Memento, whether it was the Dark Knight trilogy, especially the Dark Knight Rises, you know, whether it was Dunkirk, whatever it is, he's always come out and made great films. He's a filmmaker's filmmaker, if you understand that terminology. He loves story. He loves, you know, depth in story. He loves character-driven stuff. That's what this is. And it's about one man and how he's having to, A, come to grips with making possibly one of the most devastating things ever made, and also stopping, you know, this evil force in the Nazis who could get something like this. So I think it's one of those things where I wouldn't be shocked. And by the way, Cillian Murphy, okay, he's been in 4 or 5 Christopher Nolan films. Let's not forget that. So it's one of those things where I think that when you work with a filmmaker for a long period of time, you get to know what they want. And he, you know, he even came out and said he was pretty, his word, desperate to be in a Christopher Nolan film because he really, really thoroughly enjoyed working with this. Now, could this have any, you know, effect with awards down the road? It is interesting because as we've seen over the past, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 years, okay, there, I mean, I would expect, if I were a betting man, I would expect Murphy to get some sort of Academy Award consideration here. I think he might, okay? I think he might get a Best Actor nomination. I know that's a reach. But when you think about it, look at everybody that's either won or has been nominated. I mean, you have everybody from Rami Malek being a perfect example for Freddie Mercury, okay? But you have, you know, and it's more musical biopics. I mean, we still have had other biopics such as, you know, Invictus, for example, all the way back in the day with Matt, ironically, with Matt Damon, okay? Morgan Freeman got nominated for, you know, playing Nelson Mandela. But, you know, all of these films, you know, The Darkest Hour back in 08, you know, Gary Oldman ended up winning Best Oscar, Best Actor for that. So this could be an interesting dynamic moving forward. Now, it's way too early to tell. Okay, it's way too early to tell. What I will say is it is a blockbuster. It is coming out in blockbuster season. And it is coming out at the end of the year, so to speak, at the end of the blockbuster season. I think it has a lot going for it. And I think that being said, look out for this film, because I think Oppenheimer is going to make some noise. And I think I can't wait. I'm This is one of those. And by the way, guys, I will be doing a spoiler cast on this. Guardians, the last thing I'll say is this. Guardians, you know, that was the first spoiler cast I've done. And I'm going to be doing spoiler casts all throughout the summer for you guys. So, you know, please hit that like and subscribe button. You're getting all this content for free. I'll be talking about the Patreon at the end of the show and a couple other ways you can support me. But I will be doing spoiler casts for all these movies, whether it is Across the Spider-Verse, The Flash, Mission Impossible, all this stuff for you guys. So yeah, I think Oppenheimer looks great. What do you guys think about Oppenheimer? Have you seen the trailer? If so, did you see it with Guardians of the Galaxy 3? Or did you just watch it on YouTube like I did? Who are you excited to see in this film that maybe you wouldn't necessarily get to see? Are you going to go see this film? Anyways, leave your thoughts down in the comments and I'll get back to you. Okay, so as I've been talking about, there was a little film that came out this last weekend. Just a small film. It's been, you know, out there for a while. I mean, not out there for a while, but it's been there. And that's Guardians 3. And Guardians 3, this is kicking off blockbuster season. And this is the one that everybody was looking forward to. Not just because it is Guardians of the Galaxy. Not just because it is James Gunn. Not just because it is Marvel. But they wanted to see everything wrap up in a nice little bow. And that's what he's done. I saw it. I liked it. I really liked it. Was this his best Guardians movie? No, I think that's still the 2014 original Guardians of the Galaxy. And why we care about these? Do we care about these characters so much? Because he did make the first Guardians so good. And I think that, you know, it had all of the things you wanted, right? So it actually made, it actually did pretty well. Okay. It came in a little low than expected, but still. So this comes from The Hollywood Reporter once again, and it talks about the opening weekend for Guardians of the Galaxy, and it made $118.4 million over the weekend. James Gunn's Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 topped the weekend box office with a domestic opening of $118 million, well behind the last film in the standalone Marvel franchise, but enough to prove that the new movie is still already benefiting from strong audience sentiment. Final numbers are higher than Sunday's $114 estimate, thanks to an extraordinary Saturday to Sunday hold for Marvel Picture or any event title. The film was down 18%. In the Marvel family. Only Avengers Endgame and Infinity War saw the same, or slightly better holds. And compared to the recent fare, Guardians 3 saw less of a Saturday to Sunday drop than Super Mario, which was at 28%. But to be fair, okay, Super Mario has been out 5 weeks. So the news was even better overseas, where the superhero pick placed number one everywhere, starting with the better than expected 170.9 million from 52 markets for a worldwide debut of 289.3 million. Sunday's global estimate was 282. China led with 28 million, followed by the UK at 14, South Korea 13, Mexico at 13, and France at 8.2. In China, Guardians 3 came in at a surprise number one with 28 million despite competition from homegrown fare. That's less than the 49 million debut of the last installment. It's a strong number considering that most Hollywood movies have been doing normal business in China, and the movie is huge in South Korea. It's already earned more than Super Mario, which is already doing well across the rest of Asia, Europe, and Latin America. Any domestic opening over $100 million in the post-pandemic era is nothing to be dismissed. Still, Guardians' initial performance in North America is mixed news for Marvel and Gunn, who now runs rival DC Studios, and sparks further concern that superhero fatigue has settled in at the box office as the 2023 summer kicks off. Only a year ago, for example, Marvel's threequel, Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, soared to a best $187 million in its domestic launch. Guardians 3 certainly didn't lack for audience love. It earned an A cinema score and strong exit on post track, and that support is already paying off. On Sunday morning, Marvel and Disney thought the movie might clear no more than $110 million for the weekend, but traffic was better than expected. throughout Saturday and it saw a bump over Friday. If that trend continues, the three quote could enjoy a long run. Reviewers felt differently than consumers, with Guardians 3 sporting the lowest Rotten Tomatoes score of the three films in the franchise. In 2017, Guardians Volume 2 opened to $146 million, which was first Guardians, while the first one opened to $94.2 domestically in 2014, and that's not adjusted for inflation. It's a little unusual for a title in the MCU to open behind the previous installments in a respective series, but not unheard of sequels that didn't release as high, including Black Panther Wakanda Forever, which was released as the COVID-19 pandemic still range, and Avengers Age of Ultron. Guardians 3 opened on par with recent Marvel picks, Ant-Man Wasp Quantumania, which posted a series best $106 million and $120 million over for the four-day weekend. That movie, however, was ultimately considered a disappointment after topping out at less than $500 million of franchise low. Guardians 3 quote continues the long tradition of Marvel movies kicking off the summer season at the box office. Heading into the weekend, most recent tracking showed Guardians opening at $110 to $120 million domestic. Initial tracking showed it launching at $130 million, so the drop no doubt concerned Marvel and Disney. Guardians 3 reunites Gunn with Chris Pratt, Zoe Saldana, Dave Bautista, Karen Gillian, Sean Gunn, Bradley Cooper, and Vin Diesel. Newcomers include Chadwick Boseman as the villain of the High Evolutionary, and Will Poulter, who plays the classic Marvel character Adam Warlock. The film did huge business for IMAX in premium formats, which delivered 40% of the business. IMAX alone turned in $25 million on a global basis. After ruling the roost for four weekends, Universal and Illumination's billion-dollar blockbuster Super Mario, with voice by Pratt, finally fell to number two with an estimated $18.6 million for a hefty total of $518 million in short and north just of $1.16 billion globally. Warner Brothers' Evil Dead Rise jumped the $100 million mark globally in its third weekend. In North America, it came in number three with $5.7 million and with a domestic tally of $54 million. Overseas, it earned another $9.1 million from 63 markets for a foreign accumulation of $60.7 million and $114 million worldwide. The pick's performance at the international box office is still impressive considering that horror doesn't usually travel well. Lionsgate, Are You There, God, It's Me, Margaret, came in fourth place in its sophomore weekend with $3.4 million for a domestic tally of $12.6 million. Rounding out the top five was Screen Gems and Sony's romantic comedy, Love Again, which dared to open opposite Guardians 3 since it was going to be a different audience. The movie was DOA on its debut, only grossing $2.4 million. Written and directed by Jim Strauss, Love Again stars Sam Heughan and others. Okay, so let's talk about this real quick. Superhero fatigue. Is it there? I'm going to say no. I think everybody was looking forward to this movie, I think. Just because it didn't blow up like the first Guardians or even the sequel does not preclude it from being bad. That being said, I think there was a couple. So you have to understand a couple of things. Okay. Number one, when you have a film like this, okay, people, I have to backtrack for a minute. People forget about why Marvel basically took May, because that is their month. It's been their month for the last 10 to 12 years. So way back 20 years ago, once upon a time, there was a little movie called Spider-Man. Okay. Now, Spider-Man was supposed to open in 2001. Well, we all know what happened there. I mean, I'm not dismissing it. I'm saying we had 9/11. That being said, what Sony did was they pushed it back a year. And when they pushed it back, it came out in May of 2002 to a huge audience reaction. I mean, I still remember seeing that trailer, and you can YouTube this if you want, you know, that one with the Twin Towers. Anyways, it came out in 2002 and it was huge. Huge. Okay. Because of that, then you have Spider-Man 2 come out a couple years later and does fantastic business. And it was a fantastic movie, too. So Marvel and Sony have really owned May for the last. Then we fast forward to 08. So the Avengers comes, well, the Avengers comes out in 2012. Okay. For the past 11 years, you've had a Marvel movie come out at the beginning of May. Every single year. Every single year. 2014, we have Guardians, the very first Guardians. And I've said this before, there were a number of reasons why that worked. Because it was character driven. Okay. Because it worked. Okay. And the fact is that you cared about these characters, and that's why you were able to have a threequel or a trilogy and have this kind of opening, even though it's less than what you did before. Okay, but 2014 was a huge year for Marvel, okay? Because people, and I said it before, and you guys can go back and look at the perfect movies, you know, that I did, and I'll put that up there on the top corner for you. There was a little movie that came out called Captain America Winter Soldier that I think saved the MCU on so many different levels, okay? Number one, it was a political thriller. It was action-based. This was the first time that you really had a star, okay? A big guest star, if you will, in Robert Redford come in, playing Alexander Pierce, multitude of other things. So 2014 was a big year. So when this opened, the first Guardians opens and it did big business, people were looking forward toward the sequel. That being said, you have James Gunn elevated this from a C or D, we'll call it a C comic or characters to an A comic. And that's why it opened so well, the second one opened. And so when you're doing that, it's harder. The other thing it touched on too, okay, it's always harder to do that. So volume two, it opened to 146. So of course you're going to get the bump, right? So now let's talk about two other things real quick. Number one, okay, I got to talk about, you know, so last year, okay, as everybody knows, Multiverse of Madness came out, $187 million opening weekend. Almost made $1 billion globally. The reason why that film did so well, okay, was because you look at the success of No Way Home. No Way Home was made almost $2 billion globally, okay? So you had Doctor Strange in that. And this was going to be, when you have another Doctor Strange movie, you're hoping that it's a continuation in some capacity. So when he's in his own movie coming out in May, of course it's going to do well. That being said, so that's why that opens so well. So that if you look at the last five opening weekends of Marvel films, okay, excluding this one, they average $156 million. Okay, I'm talking about Doctor Strange, Multiverse of Madness, which opened at 187. Okay, Wakanda Forever. Okay, Thor: Love and Thunder. Okay. That's including Ant-Man and the Wasp, the new Ant-Man and the Wasp. And, you know, so that being said, it's going to average out. This is right under, it's about 20 or 30 million under the average, okay? I've said it before and I'll say it again. This is one of three films that's going to win two weekends, okay? It's going to win one this weekend, obviously, and then it's going to win next weekend, the 12th, okay? That's where it's going to really make its money. Once Fast 10 comes out, depending on how it does, okay, and this is, it's all going to be hinged on how Fast 10 does. If it's not a good film, people are not going to go back, right? They're going to go see Guardians. So this does have a chance to do very big box office. I think that even if it is a good movie, okay, relatively speaking, okay, which I'm not, I mean, I'm going to go see it, but I'm going to go in completely blind. Even if it is a good movie, okay, I think that something that needs to be considered, okay, is if there's a Marvel picture out there in a movie like this, what are you going to go see? Okay. I think people might, you know, turn to Marvel and James Gunn. Now, I'm not saying Fast 10 is going to win the 19th, the weekend of the 19th. I'm saying that, or Guardians is going to win that weekend. I'm just saying that it could definitely do some business. It was good for what it was. I teared up a couple times, didn't cry. But I thought that there were a couple of points that I really didn't care about. This obviously was an emotional scene here, and how that was done. If you guys, if you want to go back, actually, and I know I keep saying this, if you guys want to go back and watch my spoiler cast on it, I will put it up there, a little link right there for you guys to go watch. I thought it was good. Was it as good as the 2000? No, you can't duplicate that or replicate it. It's so difficult. I thought that the brief synopsis of it, I thought it was good. I didn't think it was great. It was emotional. I liked the fact that the guy didn't get the girl. And one of my biggest problems with the film is that High Evolutionary, the character, was saying the same thing over and over and over for 90 minutes. But otherwise, I mean, I was really happy with what they did with, you know, they gave Karen Gilliam's Nebula a lot of things to do. Mantis had a bigger role. Drax ended up having his storyline finish. So there were a lot of good points there. So anyways, yeah, that's Guardians 3. And look, as far as superhero fatigue is concerned, I don't think there's any. There is none. Because don't forget, you're going to have The Flash coming out in about 6 weeks. And, you know, we're going to be right in. Obviously, it's DC, but it's still superhero-based. And I think that it's going to do really good as far as, you know, some of the things are concerned. Anyways, guys, what do you think? Did you go see Guardians 3? Did you go see it in IMAX? Did you go see it in 2D? What day did you go see it? How many times have you seen it? Let me know your thoughts down in the comments and I'll get back to everybody. Okay, so we have done one Guardians story. So now what we're going to do, and I was just talking about this, we're going to do another Guardians story. And this one's a little more, you know, and this is still, you know, it's what I was saying about the box office, right? So this one, okay, comes from Variety. And it talks about the staying power. And it says, for Guardians of the Galaxy 3, it's all about box office staying power. Guardians of the Galaxy kicked off the summer movie season with $118 million domestic box office, falling just short of expectations, which is still the highest debut of the year. There are plenty of ways to parse the initial number, but the third and final installment of James Gunn's directed Marvel trilogy, it's going to be less about the opening weekend and about the whole. And I always say this, but I'll say it after I'm done reading the piece. That's industry parlance and how sharply or not movies ticket sales fall in their subsequent weekends or theatrical release. Hard to knock a film that opened above $100 million. Yet analysts were expecting a stronger start for Volume 3 because it's the last of the Marvel Legacy tentpoles, at least that have been announced. And because its predecessor, Guardians 2, enjoyed a much bigger opening at $146 million. The downturn is not the problem as long as audiences keep showing up. The issue is that the pandemic film eras is Disney's MCU has suffered from a momentum problem at the box office. Recent installments started quickly, not only to run out of the steam. Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania in particular collapsed after scoring a trilogy debut of $106 million. Ticket sales for Paul Rudd's third standalone adventure cratered 70% in its second weekend, culminating a worrying trend from Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness, down 67% in its second weekend, and Thor Love and Thunder, a 67.7% dip in its sophomore outing. It would be alarming for Guardians to suffer the same fate because it was reinforced the narrative that the MCU is struggling and maintains a A-list franchise. Under Quantumania, though, fans have embraced Volume 3, which has earned an A cinema score and 81% on Rotten Tomatoes. Although it's a positive sign that weekend's estimate of 114 was revised to 118 after a better-than-expected turnout on Sunday. But the comic book threequel has just 2 weeks without competition, so it's this week and next week. Blockbusters season revs up into high gear with Fast 10 coming on the 19th and The Little Mermaid coming on the 26th. The good news is that Volume 3 is generating very positive word of mouth, said Sean Robbins, the chief analyst at Box Office Pro. That could help it stretch its staying power to be longer than those of Quantumania and last summer's front-loaded Marvel films. David A. Gross, who runs the movie consulting firm Franchise Entertainment Research, cautions against knocking Marvel given its inevitable track record. Of the 32 films in the franchise, every single one has opened at number one, and 10 has surpassed $1 billion globally. Bear in mind, he says, for superheroes, average is the stratosphere. While that is true, the average film would kill to open in 100 million theatrical, since entire theatrical run must lift its opening weekend. Marvel movies are held to a higher standard. That's in part because they're expensive to make and market. Guardians of the Galaxy cost $250 million to produce and roughly $100 million to promote. And because they're reliable among the highest, highest grossing films of the year, Disney has been pumping these out three tentpoles a year, not including their many interconnected television series on Disney Plus to meet the demands for fans for more and more and more superheroes. A third movie, The Marvels, starring Brie Larson, opens in November. Marvel certainly has the capacity to maintain the output of the three theatrical films a year, says Paul Darabin, senior Comscore analyst. The key is to tap into what's the best of the brand and has to offer in terms of interesting characters and intriguing storylines. It's been hard to sustain that level of output since 2019's Avengers Endgame, an epic finale that was 10 years and 22 films in the making. Especially as movie theaters continue to recover from the pandemic. Analysts aren't calling it superhero fatigue because despite being the big second weekend drops, last year's Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness and Thor Love and Thunder ultimately managed to power to $955 and $760 million respectively. Ant-Man 3, however, failed to reach $500 million, ending that trilogy and making it a rare Marvel movie to lose quite a bit of money on its theatrical run. But those who closely follow the movie theater industry caution that Marvel can no longer coast on its bona fides without delivering a new groundbreaking blockbuster. Eventually, they worry, audiences will tire of the same story over and over, especially if the story isn't that good. Marvel is building their post-endgame roadmap, and it has never been more challenging in clear how challenging it is, said Robbins. Okay, let's talk about this because there's a lot to digest there. So first and foremost, okay, I think what you have to look at is the fact is that as the piece stated, okay, you had 22 films, okay, that led up to over a 10-year period that led up to, Endgame and Infinity War. And by the way, guys, I did a five-year anniversary video on Infinity War. I will put in the right up there in the corner. So that being said, here's the thing. What Marvel is, there's a lot of things going on. There's a lot of moving pieces. As I said, the big start from Multiverse of Madness, okay, was because of No Way Home. Because No Way Home, okay, what they did was they had Doctor Strange in that. So when Doctor Strange is in the next one, you're thinking, okay, this is going to really be cool. Even though it wasn't, you know. So that's why, number two, you will never see a Marvel movie, at least in my lifetime, okay, that will gross under 100 million opening week, ever. Because they have the audience. It's a four quadrant film. You have your comic book readers, you have your kids, and that's why they're all PG-13. They can get away with some stuff. Okay. You have your adults. Okay. And they're going to be fun for everybody. Now, it's all about the story. I think the other thing too is this. When you are pumping all of these films out, it's very difficult to get its quantity over quality. And I think the problem becomes that, and I've especially with the Marvel, with the Disney Plus series, right? Whether it's Loki, whether it's WandaVision, whether it's She-Hulk, I would rather see the Marvels. I would rather see 5 incredible projects a year over both, whether it's feature film and Disney Plus, than 10 mediocre ones. Because people are getting tired of it. They won't say it. Even though the Marvels was one of the highest rated film or shows on Disney Plus. Okay? That all being said, the other thing, now look, if you want to introduce a character like a Ms. Marvel on Disney Plus to have it be there in November, that's fine. But I don't need you to keep pumping these things out. And that's the problem. All of that being said, I think that Marvel has made their money. They've made their billions of dollars, not only on good storytelling, because they have had quite a few, as the piece described, okay, hit $1 billion. Now, I've always said this, okay? They've had 32 films, okay? Every single one, think about this. Every single one has debuted at number one. Every single one. And 10 of them have hit $1 billion. That's incredible. That's incredible. That's incredible. So the problem with a film, and I did, you know, at the end of the spoiler cast, I talked about this with Matthew. You have a lot of films out there that they're post-credit scenes, okay? We don't know where they're going. We have no idea. All we know right now is we have a big bad in Kang that was in Loki season one. That's it. That's it. Okay? You have films that you've put out that you have not announced anything for, that have nothing, I mean, to a certain extent, almost nothing to do with it. And people are wondering what you're doing and where you're going. You have The Eternals. Okay? You have Black Panther Wakanda Forever. You have, you know, several other films that are not, I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy, that end credit scene, which I won't talk about. You guys can watch the spoiler cast for that. You have all of these things, but Kang has only been in one series. And that film, Ant-Man and the Wasp, which, by the way, they shoehorned him in because they said, oh, we've got to tell him what the big bad is. And it didn't work. It didn't work because the thing is, if he's supposed to be such a big bad, okay, why are you putting him in an Ant-Man movie then? It doesn't make any sense. I mean, you know, if you want to tease all of this, fine. But that's why they did what they did. And as far as the drop is concerned, Marvel films have always been front-loaded, inevitably, invariably. Whether it's Doctor Strange at $187 million, or it's Thor Love and Thunder, or it's, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy, they've all been front-loaded. All of them. And then, yes, it's about, I've always said this, it's not about that opening weekend, because everybody's going to go to it. It's about that second weekend, because either people are going to wait to see it, okay, or they're going to go back and see it again. And this is why, look at Mario. And I know it's animated, I know it's, you know, shorter, but look at Mario. That film had legs, okay? That made over $500 million domestically. And it was number one for 4 weeks in a row. And it still made almost $19 million this week. Think about that. Think about that for a minute. Now, I will say one thing. They do have a luxury in May, okay? Because here's the thing, okay? If it's going to, I said, it's obviously going to win this weekend, it's going to win the next weekend. It's all going to depend on what Fast 10 does. If Fast 10 is not good, let's say it comes out and it's just not good. It's going to win the weekend, I'm not saying that. But let's say it's not good. People are going to go back to see Guardians again. Because that's really the only thing out worthwhile. The Little Mermaid. If The Little Mermaid is not good, and I'm not saying one way or the other. I mean, I hope all films do well opening weekend and further, you know, continue. But let's say it's not up to snuff. Okay, let's say it's not as good as people hoped it was going to be. Guardians still could, I think Guardians could not run the table, but make a lot of money in May. And that's something to be considered because it's going to have to, as the priest says, it's going to have staying power. And I guarantee you this is going to make only $500 million, but it's not going to make a high end of close to a billion. I think this could top, you know, come right in at $700 to $800 million, which would be a success for them, considering this is the last James Gunn film, considering, you know, a multitude of other things. But once June starts, forget about it. But I can't see Fast 10 being good, and I can't, and I mean, maybe it will be, and I don't know, but all of the indications right now are Little Mermaid's not going to do well because people are getting very tired with the live-action Disney movies, even though The Lion King made $1 billion, okay? And even though Beauty and the Beast was okay, but Pinocchio was a disaster. You know, Dumbo was not good. So I think they're going to really, and if that happens, then I think Guardians is going to do very, very well. But we'll have to see. So it will definitely win this. It definitely won this weekend. And it definitely will win next weekend. Anyways, guys, what do you think? How long do you think this run could go on for Guardians of the Galaxy? How many times will you see Guardians of the Galaxy in the theater? Will you go see another? Will you go see Guardians 3 if the other films aren't good? Let me know your thoughts down in the comments, and I'll get back to everybody. Okay, so I want to talk about a story that, it, you know, I always hate to rain on people's parade because it's one of those things where, especially in the time we're in, okay, you know, it's money is a very, what's the word I want to say? It's hard to come by, right? So when we talk about Hollywood and millions and billions of dollars, and then the story comes out, especially during the strike, this is what gets people's blood boiling. And I don't blame them. Okay. So this actually came from the THR. Okay. And it basically talks about Hollywood CEO pay. Big checks, ugly optics amidst a strike. Show me the money, Cuba Gooding Jr. famously tells Tom Cruise and Jerry Maguire. Wall Street has been pressuring Hollywood to do the same, as investors push for streaming profits and economical headwinds. Key parts of the solution for industry players, from Disney to Amazon Studios, have been to cut costs. But while entertainment companies have been showing the door, have been to thousands of staffers, they have also been the top executives, the money. Again, in a bad case, in a case of bad timing, disclosures of higher or lower, but still health, very healthy, CEO compensations and regulatory filings in March and April have made for a sharp contrast with layoffs and the start of the writer's strike. This executive pay reporting season doesn't repeat last year's pictures for several bosses joining the very exclusive nine-figure club, starring Endeavor's Ari Emanuel, $308 million. Okay, now I should say, Endeavor just bought WWE. Okay, so, you know, while that's a big, I'm not justifying it, I'm just saying Endeavor just bought WWE. So, but that is a big, big number for him. I mean, now they own the UFC, so, you know, bear that in mind too. Warner Brothers Discovery CEO David Zaslav, $246 million in Warner Brothers. But several top executives in Hollywood saw their 2022 pay days increase, many driven by large stock awards. And media sector pay has been long considered high compared to other industries, which means CEOs and boards might now face public scrutiny. Overall, we're seeing CEO compensation continue its post-COVID climb, says Amit Bashir, Senior Director of Content at corporate leadership firm Equala, about the broader corporate trends stateside. However, compensation packages for the majority of the media and entertainment executives analyzed by the THR exceeded the 2022 median pay of $22 million, up 7.7% from $21 million. Among the companies tracked by the Equala 100, which compiles compensations disclosure made by March 31st by the largest players in corporate America in revenues in various sectors. Stock awards made up the majority of the compensation packages, and those awards are typically granted at the beginning of the year. There was much less economic uncertainty to kick off 2022, he says. Therefore, the negative impacts such as cost-cutting and employee layoffs are not necessarily reflected in the value of those stock awards. Netflix Reed Hastings, who in January exited his co-CEO role to focus on his executive chairman title, led the Hollywood pack with a 2022 compensation package worth $51 million, up 25%. Meanwhile, the biggest paid gainers of THR's list below is Paramount's global CEO, Bob Backlash, with a 60% bump. Comcast's Michael Cavanagh, who in October was elevated from CFO to the additional role of president and recently took on an oversight of entertainment and arm of NBC Universal when its CEO, Jeff Shell, was fired for, quote, an inappropriate relationship, saw a 48% pay raise. Critics were not appeased by the fact that Shell and Bob Chapek, the former Disney executive, who was replaced by Iger at the end of the company's previous fiscal year, earned less in 2022 than in 2021. Last year, eight Hollywood CEOs made nearly $800 million, yet pay for TV writers has fallen by 23% over the last 10 years. Senator Bernie Sanders wrote in a May 2nd tweet. The disclosure of head of a post-strike pose a PR headache. The optics of massive layoffs are not good if the CEO and other top brass raise compensation, says Wall Street veteran Hal Vogel. Meanwhile, he sees, quote, no surprise, end quote, in cases where corporate bosses have had to take, quote, pay haircuts, end quote, given that. Lots of CEO compensation is tied to stock price performance. Many media stocks finished 2022 down sharply, after underpaying the drop in the S&P 500 stock index, which itself recorded the worst year since 08. I expect pay at the top will be reduced once again over the next year. The boards shouldn't be afraid to do this, Vogel said. With stock awards typically granted the start of the year, Bashir says 2023 pay could fall, quote, as many media companies took a hit to close out 2022 as subscriber growth cooled off and the advertising market weakened. In an interesting asterisk, the highest paid executive in broader entertainment sector was not a CEO, but a creative officer. Charlie Collar, who left Fox last year to join Roku as the head of media in late October, started off with a 2022 pay package with a whopping $53.3 million. Time will tell if that bet pays off. Okay, let's talk about this. So here is the actual, I want to bring this up for everybody. This is the actual chart, okay, that goes along with this report. Now it's kind of small, so let me just, I'll read it, not the whole thing, but I want to give you guys some of the big things. So the light green that you see is 2021, and the dark green you see there is 2022. So at the top, you had Reed Hastings from Netflix. His stock performance was down 51%, okay, from $40 million in 2021. Or I'm sorry, it went up. Okay, the stock went down, but his salary went up 25%, from $40.8 million to $51.1 million, as stated in the piece. Ted Sarandis, the CEO of Netflix, his stock also dropped 51%, but his pay went up 32%, from $38 million to $50 million. Michael Cavanagh, which was stated in the piece also, his stock dropped 31%, but his pay went up 48%, from $27 million to $40.5 million. David Zaslav, okay, took a 61% hit on the stock, okay, and his salary went down 84% from 246 million to 39 million, only 39 million. Now, it does say here, David Zaslav's 2021 pay package was driven by a May 2021 employment agreement that is set to keep the Warner Brothers Discovery CEO at the company through the end of 2027. Stock options that he received related to the extension boosted the calculated value of that package. Then we go, you know, so Comcast is 31%, and stock options went down, Brian Roberts. So it's only a 6% drop in salary. Bob Bakish, the CEO, that was also in the piece, his salary went up 38%. I'm sorry, 60%, from 20 million to 32 million. Greg Peters at Netflix, and it went up 38%. Bob Chapek went down 24%. I'm sorry, went down 26%. Ari Emanuel, okay, went down 94%, from 308 million to 19 million. But his 2021 package topped 300 million thanks to mostly a one-time stock grant tied to the company's IPO and initial public offering. His 2022 pay is more in line with what he's expected to do during the year. Bob Iger, who's currently the CEO of Disney at the moment, went down 67%. Look at this. This is, I mean, still a whopping number. It went from almost $46 million to $15 million. Jeff Shell, which just got fired, went down. So here's what I'm getting at, okay? These guys are making way, way, way too much money. Okay, way too much money. And I think that, you know, when we talk about the writer's strike right now, when we talk about these people out looking for better, you know, wanting a better job, higher pay, it blows my mind. And look, I get that they're, you know, CEO, the head honcho, the top dog, top of the totem pole. But it blows my mind that you have people making that amount of money, and then you have other people who are struggling. And this is just where the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. And inflation is not a problem for these guys, right? I mean, even making the lowest of the bunch there, okay? The lowest of the bunch is Bob Iger. His pay went down 67%, and he's still going to make $19 million. He made $19 million last year. I mean, I don't understand this. You know, it's baffling to me. Do we like the movies that they put out? Sure. But do they need to be making that much money? Really? I mean, you know, we consider the top 1% of, you know, income in this country, I don't know, $100,000, $200,000. You know, this is more than some athletes are making. You know, I mean, it's mind-blowing. So it's just infuriating to see, because it's like, look, guys, fine. You want to make your money? Fine. You can make your money. But $50, $60 million? And yes, it's in stock options. Fine. We get that. It's not liquid. But at the same time, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's just these people are making way too much money, though. And look, I get they have to run a multi-billion-dollar company. I understand they have to make decisions. But when you're laying people off and you have to cut 4,000, Disney had to cut $5 billion and they had to let go 4,000 workers in some capacity. I'm not talking hourly wage, guys. I'm talking about 4,000 people. And then you see a number like that where Iger is making $19 million to go, now, look, Chapek did a lot of damage, and I'm not disputing that. I'm just saying, so right now, Iger is cleaning up his mess, and I get that. I'm just saying that this doesn't look good. This doesn't look good at all. So, anyways, guys, what do you think about these numbers? Are you shocked to see some of these CEOs making this much money? Or is it commonplace? Do you think they should help out with, you know, giving some of this money to the writers and helping that whole thing? Anyways, let me know your comments down below. I'll get back to everybody. Okay, so one of the last stories we're going to do today is about a film that came out, some time ago. I think like 4 or 5 years ago. And ever since we've had the Snyder Cut, okay, we've had all of these other cuts, if you will, to come out and basically say, oh, you know, release this cut or release that cut. Or, you know, I mean, we've heard that, you know, there was actually a 45-minute longer version of Avengers Infinity War that the Russos did not, you know, they just didn't do because they didn't want to repeat. Anyways, I'm talking about Rogue One. Rogue One is one of those stories that it was okay. I mean, I call Rogue One Star Wars 3.5 because, you know, we have the story of the Empire. You know, we have how Darth Vader came in, and of course we have Episode 4, A New Hope. And, you know, one of the stories that had never been told over the course of many decades, many movies, is how the rebels got the plans. That's what this story is. It is the rebels getting the plans to blow up that first Death Star. So it's been a minute since I've seen this, but it was a good movie. It was an introduction of characters, you know, and how they were done and everything else. So this comes from THR, and Tony Gilroy, who was the director of this movie, I believe he was the director or the editor. Anyways, now mind you, this is the same guy that did the Bourne series, okay? Says that there will never be a better edit of Rogue One, and it does not exist. So Rogue One, a Star Wars story, is perhaps the most maddening of the Disney Star Wars films. There is so much potential that made it on screen, and also so much that stumbles along the way. The film is gorgeously shot by Dune cinematographer Greg Fraser. The ending is emotional and shocking. Cassian Andor, which of course we have, you know, the whole Andor series, Diego Luna, and his robot sidekick, K2SO, remain enduring. Yet the film is burdened by a soggy midsection of listless lead characters, including J.R. Erso, played by Felicity Jones, among other issues, or perhaps not, debating exactly what went wrong with Rogue One, is it not part of the fandom? So let's transition. Star Wars fans have long wondered if perhaps a better edit might someday be released, given how much footage was shot for the film that did not make it into the final cut. So, for example, this shot you see here was actually in one of the very first trailers, but never made it into the film. The production famously was directed by Garth Edwards, then underwent 5 weeks of reshoots with Tony Gilroy taking over to punch up Gary Witter's script and oversee the additional filming. Rogue One's initial trailer, TV spots, which is shown below, which you guys can YouTube if you want, contains many tantalizing shots, including this one you're seeing on the screen, that hinted at scenes that never made the final cut. So the version that was released in theaters by Disney is the best possible edit. Could there ever be a bigger and better version of Rogue One someday down the road? Gilroy, coming off the massive critical acclaim of the first season of Disney Plus's Rogue One prequel, Andor, gave us a definitive answer. No, that was the absolute best possible version you could ever have. Oh my God, no. More detail, please? I'm not going to go into any more detail, Gilroy tells the DHR an interview before the strike. But the more authority that you hear people talk online about what happened in the movie, the less they know. That's all that needs to be said. Maybe someday, but no. That's the absolute best version of the movie that you could possibly imagine in the time that was given. Actor Ben Mendelsohn, who played the villainous Orson Krennic in the film, said in 2016 that the production's unused footage has been told a vast would have told a vastly different story. There were enormous differences within, I would say, 20 or 30 of the shots, he said, that would be enormously different renderings. Gilroy is currently working on filming his second and the final season of Andor in the UK. The new episodes are expected to debut in 2024. Meanwhile, Edwards' upcoming Disney sci-fi film, The Crater, originally titled True Love, is generating very positive buzz after its trailer and was recently revealed at CinemaCon. The film examines the emotions humanity must endure in the face of a robotic threat. One writer from THR in the room compared it to, well, Rogue One, in a good way. Okay, let's talk about this. So I think the fact that you have some, you know, people wanting a better cut, if you will, just be happy with what you have. Because, for example, this shot here never made it in a film, and it's stunning. But I also know why, okay? You know, it's one of those things where I don't understand the perpetuation of stuff like this. Because, you know, if you want to put it in a deleted scene, fine, okay? But to say there's a completely different film out there or add-on film, just be happy with what you have. That's why, honestly, that's why I buy, when I buy Blu-rays, and I buy, that's all I buy is Blu-rays. But when I buy movies, I only buy Blu-rays for the deleted scenes, because DVDs don't usually offer it. They'll offer a couple things. But Blu-rays are more in-depth. They'll offer, you know, documentaries about it, deleted scenes, everything. And that's, to me, that's where the meat and potatoes is. That's where the basic story comes from and everything else. Look, just be happy with what you have. And I think that when you are happy with what you have, because look, you're never going to please everybody. And I think that's something to be said. And, you know, maybe 20 years down the road, like Gilroy said, we're going to get something that's better than what we have now. But better to who? Better to somebody else out there? Or better to, a few people? You're never going to be able to please anybody. And that's the beauty about film, okay? Is that you can like a film, but somebody else may not. And then you not try to convince them, but you tell them why, and vice versa. It's art. It's just a visual medium. Yeah, so I think that it's something that needs to be, you know, just put to bed. You know, it just needs to be put to bed. And, you know, it is what it is. It is what it is. And that's, you know, we can always wonder, right? So anyways, what do you guys think about this? Have you seen Rogue One? Did you like Rogue One? Did you think it fit in to all of the different lore of Star Wars? Who was your favorite character of Rogue One? Did you like Endor? Leave me your thoughts down in the comment section and I'll get back to everybody. Okay, so that is it for today's show. So a couple of things off the top. I did say I was going to do the live streams, and I will. I have not forgotten about the Untouchables and Training Day. I want to do them. Well, I have both the notes together. So I will put that up. I will do that sometime during the month of May and get that up on Patreon for you guys. I have not forgotten. Trust me. Speaking of Patreon, if you want to go there right now, what we have for you is, what I have for you is this. I have two different levels. I have one that is $5 and I have one that is $10. Okay. $5 is going to get you Mob Mondays. Mob Mondays consists of something that I've been wanting to start for a long time and never got around to. Okay. And so the very first show I did was with a screenwriter named Brad Rochefort. We did The Departed, the 2008 Best Picture winner. You know, DiCaprio, Matt Damon, you know, Jack Nicholson, Mark Wahlberg. I mean, just a fantastic movie. So that's $5. $10 will get you both Mob Mondays and Rewatch Wednesdays. Rewatch Wednesdays are films that I have seen before, but I haven't seen in a long time. The film I did to begin with this series is Steve Jobs, the Michael Fassbender, Kate Winslet film directed by Danny Boyle. 2015 fantastic movie. $10 is going to get you both, and you will be getting one every single month. That being said, if you'd like to support me in a different manner, there is that join button down at the bottom of the screen. Just hit the join button. It's $3 a month. It's less than a gallon of gas right now. And that would help me out greatly. Also, guys, if you stop in here just even for a few minutes, hit that like and subscribe button, because that's going to get this out to everybody that is watching this kind of content. And you guys are going to be getting a ton of stuff over the course of the next few months. I'm going to be doing the shows like this, okay? You guys are going to be getting spoiler casts of all of the big movies. Not just Guardians, but it's going to be Fast 10. It's going to be Across the Spider-Verse. It's going to be The Flash. It's going to be Mission Impossible. You know, it's going to be Oppenheimer. There's so much stuff. Plus, we have the Perfect Movies. Perfect Movies, and you can go on the page and check this out. It's once a month I sit down and talk to either, you know, talk about a certain film, or I might bring a guest on, and we talk about a certain film that I believe is critically acclaimed, but I believe is a perfect movie. So we kicked off the year with Silence of the Lambs, with the 30th anniversary of that happening. In February, we did Captain America Winter Soldier. In March, we did Heat. In April, we did The Social Network. And just a few days ago was put up, and Matthew Anderson and I sat down and we did The Empire Strikes Back. In June, we are going to be sitting down. I'm going to try and get somebody. I'm going to be doing The Dark Knight. And this is going to be monthly for the whole rest of the year, guys. That's just one small thing you get on the channel. Not to mention the shows, not to mention the spoiler casts, all of this stuff. So that I ask you guys, please support me. And, you know, because this stuff does cost money to make. Tell your friends about me, you know, because it's one of those things where, as I said, exposure, that's what I'm trying to get at. I will be sitting down to record those two at some point. If I do it off air, I will let you guys know, and I will just put them right on Patreon. But that's it. So that's it. And do the three things you need to do. Be safe, be careful, and have a great rest of the day. I'm David Steele. You have been watching Real Talks. Bye-bye, guys.